Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Rachel, exclusively on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the show. Today is Monday, October 9th. It's Columbus Day. Rachel is not here today. She's in Vegas. Just performed over the weekend some comedy. And I'm joined yet once again by Kay Brandt.
Good morning.
Good morning, Kay. As you can see, she's got a very pleasant voice. She's got a great attitude about life. So it's always fun to have you here.
Well, thank you. I love being here.
A lot of stuff is happening and stuff, but we'll get to that in just a moment. How was your weekend?
It was okay.
Yeah? Okay?
Yeah.
It was hot, huh?
It was a hot weekend. It was hot. It was
not that bad, actually.
100 degrees where I live. So.
Really? Mm-hmm. Oh, yesterday was actually like a real nice day. It was like 83 degrees.
Here. Yeah,
and here it usually gets even hotter than anywhere. Mm-hmm. But you're saying that in Santa Clarita it got hotter?
It was 100 degrees.
Wow.
Yeah. Just crept up. And then when this giant windstorm came in the middle of the night. And
really?
The day, yeah.
So it's just like a wind out of nowhere?
It doesn't usually happen? It happens in the fall and spring.
Really?
Santa Clarita gets winds.
Wow.
Yeah.
How far is Santa Clarita in miles from here? Do you know?
20 miles? Yeah, 25.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah.
North.
Wow. Yeah, it should be a 25-minute drive, and it probably takes a lot longer, right?
Sure does.
Well, we appreciate you joining us, Kay. Do you have to drive out here often? Do you work in the city?
I only drive out here for you.
Just for me, mm-hmm. huh? Wow. No, I'm really impressed. I'm really feeling flattered.
I used to drive out here all the time.
Yeah.
All the time.
But it doesn't make sense, right? You got to live where you live. I mean, you got to shop there. You got to, you know?
But I was a fitness instructor for 24 Hour Fitness for 10 years.
Really?
And I worked at all the gyms out here. The one at the Sherman Oaks Galleria and Panorama City and Northridge.
Okay, so you had to drive here quite a bit.
Quite a bit.
How long have you lived there in Santa Clarita?
Since 2002.
Oh, okay. So that's been a while, 15 years.
Yeah, well, I wanted to buy a house.
Yeah.
And the prices in the San Fernando Valley were already, even then, that was before the big boom, the big real estate boom out here.
Right.
And even then, the prices in the valley were not anything that I could afford or wanted to pay.
Right.
Because the homes were all old.
Yeah, I know.
So most of them required new piping, new roofs, new that. So you just had to figure that into the cost.
Right.
And you move out to Santa Clarita and you've got a brand new home for far less.
That's true,
brand
right?
new.
Yeah. It's just that you're far, you know. But like if I had to do the strip every day, I don't think I would. But when you do it occasionally, it's fine, mm-hmm. right? I mean, you work at home a lot probably, right?
From home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, so for you, it works perfectly, I think.
It is. It's okay.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not that big of a deal. It's just...
I guess you get used to
there's
it.
There's no reason to come into the San Fernando Valley. There's not even like any
What about to the city at all? You don't have to...
Oh, yeah. I go to downtown and LA, Hollywood a lot. But there are culinary destinations and concert venues. Who's that? Someone's waving
Matt.
At you.
Matt can come in.
Okay.
Yeah, what the hell? We'll have him come in. You don't have to prepare for your next show or anything? Okay, have a seat. Let's move. We're going to have an impromptu guest here. We'll get to him in just a moment because he gets
here
early.
This guy was waving at the window of the studio here.
Yeah, I'll introduce him to you in just a second. And I just wanted to... where did you grow up, Kay?
That's a long story.
Just give us one place. The name of a place.
I was raised on the Carnival Midway of the late 60s, early 1970s. So I was raised in 40 different states. And by the time I was 4 years old, my parents decided to land in Hollywood.
And 40 different states.
Mm-hmm.
When did
in
you have
4 years.
To move? How?
It was a carnival.
Oh.
They had a shooting gallery.
Okay.
Yeah. So I was a carny kid. Which was the name of my production company.
Carny Kid.
Back in the 90s, Carnival Kid Productions.
Yeah, I wouldn't have known what
it
means.
Yeah, you know, you wouldn't have known.
Wow, what an interesting childhood, huh?
Yeah, well, there's more to the story than that. There's so much story that when I had a theater company in the 90s, I wrote a play based on my childhood. And it was just too big. It was like a three-hour play. It was just too big, too expensive to keep on stage, so I had a limited run. And then I thought about making it into a screenplay, but I just haven't been able to see it clearly enough to write it.
Yeah, yeah.
Too close.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've had other writers over the years come in and say, oh, well, I can do my take on it, and they never get it.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, well, an autobiography is not easy. You know?
No. Yeah. That's why usually if somebody else ghostwrite it.
Sometimes I wonder, how do people remember what they said like 50 years ago, you know?
But they don't.
The thing is, yeah. But also, I think if you keep journals and stuff, you know, maybe people keep journals.
Yeah,
and
that's all
things.
Important. But I mean, you can't. There's no way to know any of those details. But,
right.
But then after I moved to Hollywood at 4 years old, I lived in an apartment building right underneath the Hollywood sign or near the Hollywood, and right. And that I went to preschool in Hollywood, and my dad, who went from Carney to working for Billboard magazine, and so I was exposed to the industry, to the entertainment industry, at a very young age.
Very cool.
Yeah,
I like that.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. Cool. All right. Well, so this is Kay Brandt. Now you guys know. How can people find you if they want to? Do you have like? I mean, because we always talk about what you do and stuff, but. I would imagine everybody knows you by now. But
maybe.
Just tell us.
Okay, if they listen every single day.
They do.
They may have missed all my co-hosting shows and guest
how
appearances.
Could they? You've
who
been
knows?
Here so much.
I know. How can they find me? Well, I'm an award-winning adult filmmaker and a best-selling author with 24 books on Amazon to choose from. And over 50 adult movies that I've written and directed.
There you go. Very productive woman.
Yes. You can find me on Twitter at JewelBoxFilms. That's JewelBoxFilms. I always have to spell that out.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, the... so you peddle temptation, seduction, right?
Peddling.
Turning people on.
Yes.
You know, it's funny because when I was a kid, they used to have like adult movies in theaters, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, when you're under 16, you sneak in all that stuff, you know?
Sure.
And then, but I always wondered why people go there. Because it turns you on, but it doesn't get you off unless you do something there.
The raincoat theory.
Exactly. But that's terrible. You know, so you're going to be aroused with a lot of people around you. I don't get it.
Well.
You know, it's a personal, private thing, I think. You know.
Yeah. But we didn't have VCRs then.
I know. We had to go somewhere to get turned on.
And not everybody wanted to pay for, what was it? It was HBO I don't know. We were talking like a couple months ago about On TV. Do you remember On TV? It was a box that sat on top of the television in the 1970s.
No, we didn't talk about this. It wasn't here.
Okay, so I remember in like 79, my mom and stepdad had a box on top of their television. Was called On TV. So
okay, I think I remember something.
You paid
like
a
that.
Prescription service, but it was before HBO, Showtime, any of these other premium channels. We didn't have more than like the basic 12.
Right.
And you just turned it on to off. That's why it was called on. And if it was on, you were in your pay service and you got movies and adult movies after, you know,
Very cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, well. I'm I think we need movies and books to turn us on. There's nothing wrong with that, you know, open our imagination a little bit and
there's nothing wrong with it. But if you're not a buyer of it or a consumer, a connoisseur of it, you won't know how popular it actually is.
Right, or how great it can be.
That's
too,
the thing about in the adult industry. Like if I just sit on my Twitter feed all day, I could just have, you know, I could buy into my own, not hype, because it's not hype, but like your ego kind of gets in the way because you realize just how many people are like, okay, we love what you do. Oh, please make more movies.
Right.
Please write more books. And that's what you want, you know, when you're a writer, director, author.
In that genre,
that's what you want. But if you don't look outside of the adult industry or social media, you realize there's a million people who don't ever watch adult movies for one reason or another, and they have no idea who
I am. No idea what's going on there.
Right.
Yeah.
And it seems like right now you're sort of in that category. I mean, you know about me just because I've been on the show and you looked at my stuff. But if I hadn't been here, maybe you would never have known.
What?
About me.
Oh, well, are we talking about knowing you? I thought you were talking about like people never watch sex and they don't know anything about
knowing
it.
Knowing that there is a female making adult movies out there.
Oh, okay. Well, that's cool. You know, so you got to promote that, you know, to women.
I
do. Let them know.
I do. We've talked about this before, that most of my fan base, well, at least 60% of my fan base is women.
That's amazing, you see, and that they can connect with you and you connect with them.
Yeah.
Very cool. All right, well, we ignored our impromptu guest enough, so we're going to bring him on. All right, this is a guest. By the way, I want to introduce you to him. So this is Kay. Now
Hi.
You know her. We're joined by Matt Polacek. Good morning, Matt.
Good morning, guys.
I haven't seen you in a while. I forgot your name already. You've been gone for a while. Matt hosts or co-hosts a show, Answers for the Family, which comes on right after us on Monday, which is today. And tell us a little bit about the show. You host it with Alan Cardoza.
Yeah, I've been on a little hiatus, but Alan really is the main host of Answers for the Family, and it's really a show based on the needs of people in America today, families, and it realms from everything from raising kids in today's world to addiction to discussions on, you know, what when you look at, for instance, your line of work, do you look at, you know, is it an addiction? Is it not an addiction? You know, is it healthy? Is it not healthy? So
right.
Alan and I basically take topics that are prominent and important in parenting in today's world and then throw them around with experts such as you guys.
That's
cool. Sounds good, man. And you also work for the Betty Ford Center out here in West LA. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so I'm the director at the Betty Ford Center, which obviously most people know the name, is a drug and alcohol facility helping people with their substance use and abuse in some ways. And the goal really is to help people deal with addiction in real life situations. So, you know, some people go away to residential, but we're an outpatient center. So people are living their day-to-day life and getting help and trying to, you know, to work with this disease on an outpatient level. So,
right. Yeah.
A little different.
And the amazing thing is also you guys are have sort of rebranded by making this available to more people than used to be just for rich celebrities, you know?
Mm-hmm. I think the name Betty Ford, you know.
It scares a lot of people. How am I going to afford it?
Yeah. For high-profile people with money.
Exactly.
Go to dry out.
But not anymore, you know? That's
I think
the thing.
3 years ago we went in-network with most major insurance.
Wow.
And so now it's very reasonable, you know. Hopefully, a lot of people that have insurance, and getting insurance is a whole other conversation.
Right,
can access great, you know, services. So that's the goal, and
that's awesome. And with Matt as a director, you know, you're going to get some good results. He's a good man. He's a really good man, and you can tell just by looking at him. So, so you've been traveling a little bit. What, business, work?
Yeah, we expanded. We opened up San Diego, and so we've got an outpatient in San Diego now. And really, we've just been growing. You know, there's a lot, unfortunately, going on with the opioid epidemic. And so the numbers of people affected by drugs and alcohol just continues to increase. There was a study that came out a couple weeks ago that women between the ages of 30 and 55 is the largest growing kind of epidemic with alcohol.
Wow.
So they have like, they call it like mommy juice. Mm. And so a lot of women.
I know all about that.
Yeah, there you go.
I mean, I just know about alcohol is what I meant to say.
Well, it's mommy stuff too. There you go.
And we had the, you know, the Hazelden Betty Ford Center in West LA, we actually have an adult entertainment industry meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a support group for people.
Really? I have to tell them because they're trying to start their own and it's not working out very well.
Who
so,
are?
Well, I'll tell you later.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But because I don't know if they want me to talk about it. But
that's
but
a pretty private thing because
it
of
is
the
a private
security
thing, right?
And, you know,
and they need their own group, right? Because they deal with unique situations.
Unique situations that, you know, a lot of people, there's a lot of interesting and unique challenges to privacy and to, you know, and unfortunately, drugs and alcohol affect every population. And so creating a safe place for people in the industry, I think, is important, where they can go and talk and get tools and coping skills and hopefully, you know, learn to navigate their life in a healthy way without drugs and alcohol.
Yeah, yeah. Well, for those of you just joining us, we're talking to Matt Polacek, who happened to walk in here. We just pulled him out of the hallway.
He was waving so
I didn't want to interrupt, you know? You
guys no. But you see, you let us know you're here, and that's a good thing. Because if we don't have a guest, we love having you here. And besides, I think Alan's going to be here next week. So if you're gonna if you happen to be around, you can join us too. We always love having you on the show.
Yeah, here. Interesting enough, Alan's guest next week is the Cigarette Whisperer. And his whole thing is, I think it's like 30 minutes or 60 minutes, and he gets people to quit cigarettes. Right. So I'm fascinated.
I've had him on the show.
Rocky on, yeah.
And yeah, Rocky, and he's pretty good. You know, he's pretty good. Yeah.
Wow.
So, but I haven't subscribed to his program, so thus I'm still smoking.
But you don't want to quit. See, that's the thing.
People don't want to quit.
No.
Many smokers, you know.
No.
But that's an addiction in itself. Do you guys? You don't deal with cigarettes, though, right?
We do, really. Yeah, we do. Yeah,
oh, wow.
You know, you have withdrawals, and like most things, it can be very addicting. And
right.
Obviously, you know as well as a lot of people that
there's a lot of danger with cigarettes. But cigarettes, do they ruin? I guess they can ruin your own life. But like drugs, for example, they can ruin relationships. They can ruin your life. Things like that. Do cigarettes do that? I mean, that's a set of unique problems there.
I think it depends on the person. I mean, if I've got a 7-year-old daughter, and if I've got lung cancer due to cigarettes, it's going to ruin her life.
Right.
So I think that we have secondary impacts on things.
That's true.
Secondhand smoke, and you know, there's a lot outside of ourselves that we affect that we don't even realize. But I think it's important for all people to take care of themselves.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It sounds good. So, yeah, so the point is, people, if you need a recovery, rehab place, Betty Ford Center is available with most insurance, so you can actually reach out to them. And you know you're going to get great quality service because you guys have been around forever, right?
Yeah.
Since Betty Ford
it's
started
It's a name
this.
Brand.
Yeah, for sure, you know.
In recovery, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if you brought up, like, recovery, you guys would be the first ones to come up, you know?
Yeah, she had a lot of courage when she came
really
out.
She really did,
and
right?
Yeah, and yeah. I think about that. I used to think about that years ago, not just, like, recently, but years ago, thinking, and I don't even know why, because I was way too young to even, like, put all this information together and make it important, but sometimes I was always that kid who had, like, these deep philosophical thoughts.
Right.
I'm like, 10, you know, I don't, who knows, but maybe that's a byproduct of being on the carnival for the first 4 years of my life. But I just remember thinking that to be a first lady,
unbelievable,
to be drunk, to be an alcoholic,
and
as a first
woman
lady
at the time,
yeah,
I
was
mean,
like,
the stigma.
I mean, because she was a butt of a lot of jokes. I remember Saturday Night Live used to parody her all the time in the 70s.
Wow.
Yeah, and she was just kind of like, I remember just hearing adults around me as a kid, like, making jokes about, well, you know, Betty Ford or this or that, whatever, because it was too hard to understand because everybody was drunk in the 70s and the 80s, you know, and people are still drunk now. So it's not like, you know, I mean, I think it was more of just like, wow, what happened? Like, she really must have fallen off the deep end in order to end up in rehab and have to dry out. And then there's always that thing of thinking about, no, I don't ever want to dry out.
Yeah,
you know,
it
must have been that bad to have to be in a situation where she had to give it up. And I think about that as a woman now, you know, in my mid years, coping, because she must have been in her 40s.
Yeah, later when she.
Matt, you gotta get closer to
her. Oh,
I'm
sorry. Okay.
You'll hate yourself later if you listen to the show.
When she went to rehab, she was probably in her 40s, right? When she was the first lady.
Yeah.
So that's tough. Because, you know, not everyone can handle the pressure of being in the White House. Not everybody can handle the pressure of being married to a president. A
lot of eyes on her.
A lot of eyes. And we were talking last week a few times when I was here about mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's a lot of where addiction stems from,
mm-hmm.
you know, is
right.
that there's something off balance, something that alcohol is filling the place of and soothing over, something that's making it easier. But for her, it just went over the deep end.
Yeah, and that's the tricky part is people can stop drinking, but they're not fixing the underlying
problems. Right.
And so it's just a default. And why would you not go back at some point if you didn't develop the skills or understood the understanding of what caused it to begin with?
Exactly.
So do you guys also handle like dual diagnosis where somebody has mental illness and then I guess you have to have therapists and psychiatrists
on
staff?
So we have a full-time psychologist. And the assumption is about 40 to 50% of people that come in are going to have a, you know, some kind of mental disorder. Issue.
Wow, very interesting. So yeah, so you got to take care of that, because if you're self-medicating and you don't solve the original problem, you're going to go back to it, right? There's just no question about it.
There's no question about it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so now we know what Matt does, you know, because we don't want to talk about drug rehab right. every time he's here, because he's more than that, you know.
What else are you?
I'm a great juggler.
I love jugglers.
He's a father. Yeah. How many kids do you have?
We just have one. We have
just the one.
Eden, who's seven. Yeah, we were good after one.
Right. That's all the problem.
I got a lot of respect for parents.
Really? Yeah, I know. I also have respect for people that say I don't want kids because I won't be a good parent.
It's, you
know, I love admirable. Those people.
Yeah, right?
I love those people.
Right. Mm-hmm. But I got to tell you, and we're talking about that, I wanted to bring up the millennials for a second, okay, because I saw my daughter yesterday and we had conversations and stuff. And you know how we sit here and politically we talk about things that affect us every day, you know, as far as you know, politics, social issues, things like that. And she says, you know what, Dad? She says, the future belongs to my generation. Why are you guys even meddling in this, you know? let us decide our own future.
Oh, boy.
And I'm saying, I told her, I said, you know, it makes sense, but I still have 30 years around here, you know? So, you know, I still want to, but they make sense. You know, they're going to be a different generation. And I told her, I said, you know, but I don't, I think there's a lot of things they're going to lose out on because they'll let go a lot of traditions that have lived for hundreds of years with people.
Like what?
I don't know.
It was a good statement, though.
No. It was a great statement. Yeah. And I thought about it a lot. But I'm now thinking I don't really want to get deep into
it.
Yeah, because it's like deep politics and stuff. Mm-hmm. I don't really
want
to get into that today, you know?
Yeah.
There's just a lot of cool stuff going on. But I didn't want to bring up Harvey Weinstein because that's a big news. Have you heard about it?
What?
Harvey Weinstein is the head of the Weinstein
Company.
Right,
I know who
he is. Which was Miramar.
Yeah.
No, I'm explaining to the, to the listeners.
Oh, to the listeners.
Yeah. So he's been accused of sexual harassment the past couple weeks.
Yeah.
So finally they put a pressure on him and fired him from his own company.
Good Lord.
Right? But a lot of people are saying, well, not a lot of people. Some people are saying, why has Hollywood been quiet about it? Why are they condemning it
more? I can answer that question.
Okay, tell us.
Unless you want to finish your sentence.
No, I'm done.
Okay. Being someone who spent 20 years in mainstream before I crossed over into the dark side and started making movies as an adult, I'd never been more mistreated and disrespected as a woman than I was in mainstream.
Oh.
Because it's the majority of Hollywood, the majority of the mainstream entertainment industry is run by men. Right. These are men who have a lot of power, a lot of money. And
white
they're
men.
Not,
right.
Yes. And they're not particularly stable mentally. In fact, I have a good friend that I worked with at 24 Fitness who was an instructor with me there. And she's married to a big-time executive. And she says he can't handle the simple tasks when he gets home. Like, he can't function because he's high-functioning in a high-pressure environment where every decision he makes has to be right on the money or else he loses his job. That he can't deal with it at home. So a lot of the people who are in these positions, we see as like, oh, they've got it all together. They've achieved. They went to college. They went through the ranks. They ended up here because they have the business know-how and they know how to put projects forward and they have a winning streak and they have a good eye for this. And they really don't have any of that.
Right.
They have some of it. Harvey did. I mean, look, Harvey has a legacy and that's the shame. You know, months ago we were talking about Bill Cosby.
Right.
And that thing like, all this, his whole life, building this career and this reputation as being somebody who was untouchable, family friendly, somebody you could trust with your children, somebody you could trust in general, and none of that was true. And now he's going to go down like this, and history is being remembered for like the worst thing ever, and everything else is erased. Now, the thing about Harvey is that he's just like every other executive that I met. I was always sexually harassed, always, constantly, and it didn't matter what, if I was an indie company or a big production company, there I can name on two hands, so at least 10 executives that didn't. That works, but the rest of them, and I met a lot of them over 20 years and dealt with a lot of them and pitched projects to a lot of them, they don't give a crap about it. First of all, they don't respect women at all. Yeah. And secondly, they don't care. They just don't care, you know, because nobody was looking over their shoulders in the 80s and 90s. They could do whatever they wanted.
Right. They still try to get away with it. You
absolutely.
Know? That's why now it's starting to backfire on them.
But I think he's singled out because if you want to go through it and investigate every single head of Paramount, Sony, MGM, UA, take it. So, you know, just go through the whole thing. Right. You're going to find that there's many, 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 many others.
So it's a culture.
It's a culture. It's just power. It's a power trip. It's the same reason why, you know, in literature and movies, BDSM is so popular. Because it's the whole total power exchange of they're in control. They can do whatever they want. If you're not in control, you have to obey. And that's what it all kind of comes down to. Yeah. You know, like I'm a natural blonde.
Oh, really?
And I started dyeing my hair darker and darker in the 1990s, in my late 20s, early 30s, in order to gain more respect when I had when I had pitch meetings
very
with executives. Because I wasn't getting it as a blonde. I would literally just have people go like start yawning in the middle of a meeting. You know? So I started, and it was like as soon as I started darkening my hair, suddenly more doors started opening up. People took me more seriously in my meetings with them.
It was very weird.
Like my career just took off in a different way. But listen, there are plenty of women that are in control in the entertainment industry too, and I worked pretty closely with two of them who are at DreamWorks, and they don't handle business the same way as men do at all. In fact, they don't even entertain like a friendly a friendly exchange.
Matt, why do you think people put their careers like this on the line? They don't think about it. You think like Anthony Weiner, you know, all these things. It's like these people constantly get caught in sexual affairs and things like that or whatever. Their career is ruined.
I think it's ego and power. Like you said, everyone from
the time. So they're drunk in power.
Drunk in power and untouchable.
Yep.
And,
you
know, the reality is everyone's touchable.
Impulsive. Yeah. One of the biggest addictions, and it falls under the category of mental illness, is impulsiveness. And not being able to control your emotions or your impulses. So they have enough power and enough this and enough that they actually think they can get away with
it. And he has for how many years?
Yeah,
probably,
he did.
You know?
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
That's the thing, you know? But you have to remember that today, this shit doesn't fly, you know? I mean, women are not going to let this happen anymore.
Yeah.
There are countries where it's still like expected and accepted that men behave like this, groping everywhere, you know,
and
like India and some of these places where it's totally okay.
Oh, yeah.
But until somebody wakes up one day and says, and says to the women, you know, or one of the women will say, enough is enough.
Yeah.
You know, this rape culture. And
unfortunately, whistleblowers are never really protected. Mm-mm. I was a whistleblower at a recording studio, a big recording studio that I worked at, in the late 1990s, and in Burbank, and one of the main guys there was very, he never touched me, but he was constantly making sexual comments towards me, constantly.
And that makes you uncomfortable.
It was a company filled with men.
Yeah.
I was maybe one of three women that worked there. And it was just, it was nonstop. So one day I had to report him, and it did not work in my favor.
Really?
Well, they didn't fire him. They removed him from the facility, but they had two recording studios, one across the street from another. And
they just moved him to another,
and they told him not to talk to me. But
but as a father of a daughter, and then the situation here in the story, I would never want my daughter to go to work excited. You know, here I need to go to this record studio and work with these people.
Oh, it was a great job, too.
And to feel uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And like you said, the whistleblowers are shamed. They're ousted. It's like Betty Ford coming forward when she came forward.
Yeah.
I mean, you're going against the current, and it takes courage, and there's ridicule.
Oh, yeah,
and
backlash.
Social backlash. I mean, the fact that, you know, you had to experience that, like, just upset me just hearing it, because you're excited, you want a chance to work, and you've earned that chance.
And it was what was working with top talent. It was a beautiful studio. They had this scoring stage. They had a multi-million dollar scoring stage of Madonna and Ricky Martin did one of their songs, and they recorded in that studio with the 80-piece orchestra. That's how big the stage was.
Wow.
And they had major movies. They had a building inside the studio called Studio X, and it was a multi-million dollar scoring stage for movies, if you've never been inside a scoring studio or an audio box or whatever you want to call it, I mean, we have all kinds of names for those. It's like going into a private movie theater with a giant screen and very plush, like first class seating. And Steven Spielberg came there to score one of his movies. Cool. Yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, but I had this amazing opportunity.
Yeah, they don't take you as like a person, like what you have to offer. They just look at you as an object.
They did,
you
know? But this guy just thought he could.
Yeah.
You know, and he didn't stop when I told him, no, stop, I'm not into this, don't talk to me that way.
Yeah.
You know. But then again, and then a year later, they hired somebody else part-time who they made me train, and I knew intuitively that they were hiring her to take over my position, and they fired me about a couple weeks later.
Wow. You know, Ronan says the same thing about Sam, you know.
Yeah. Really?
Oh, God damn, man. I didn't know about that one. But, yeah, so that's very interesting how this this happens. And finally, women are speaking up in the past several decades, you know. They've decided. But to me, it's mind-boggling that it's still happening, and so much of it, you know. And again, these men are like putting their careers on the line. They build them for so many years, and then, like you said, they just like ruin it in a second. And that's all we remember them for.
They're making big seven-figure salaries, right. And when you are making that much money, and you have a boys' club, a men's club around you. Mm-hmm.
That's true. You think
judges,
you have access
doctors.
To these women, absolutely. And that they are interested in you, and
yeah.
Wow.
They don't hear no very often.
No, right?
No, they
That's
don't.
True, right? So, and you guys have some like high profile people there and stuff, right? So they, it's like, it.
Oh, man.
That's okay. He wasn't prepared to go on an interview. There you go. But
I'm going to list all the high profile people right now for you guys.
No, no, that's not what I asked. What I was trying to say is that like Matt, get serious. Don't ask me who they are. No, I would never do that. But just to say that the addiction transcends any layer of society. It doesn't matter what you do, who you are, whatever. It can grab.
It doesn't
you.
Discriminate.
It doesn't discriminate. It's but
bipartisan.
Addiction is by far. It goes way beyond. And drugs and alcohol, it's right. Addiction can be anything.
Right.
And not just porn or sex or anything like that. It can be sports. It can be, I know plenty of people that were addicted to fitness.
Yeah.
And that is an incredibly dangerous thing to be addicted to because of the damage you put on your body. Yeah. I mean, like, I know people who are always at the gym. 2, 3, 4 hours at a stretch.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Every single day. Right. And it's good for a little while until they can no longer do it, and then something else has to, because literally the body can only take so much. That's why athletes have a shelf life.
Right? Yeah, that's true. Wow.
Well, I mean, look at Tiger Woods.
Yeah.
His
body has totally rebelled. He's got nothing. He can't. His back is so screwed up.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
From golf?
Well, yes.
Or from working out?
His torque. He had a killer swing, and it just threw. It destroyed his back.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's another guy.
Now, there's an irony, right?
Yeah. Right.
Powerful
all the way
guy.
Around.
Yeah. That's true, yeah. So you guys have to deal with mental illness a lot. You see that a lot. Do you think the like things like Las Vegas last week and stuff like that, do you attribute that to mental illness?
I mean, you would have to. I mean, I look at a guy like this, and I don't know the history on this this guy.
Right. I don't think any of us do.
It's so hard to just wrap my arms around how anyone has the right or the idea to take anyone else's life. Not that, you know.
But like
people
that,
stick their own, but like that.
Completely premeditated.
I don't even know how to have that conversation with my daughter.
Right.
I can't.
Then don't.
I can't. It's so upsetting even having this conversation. I mean, like. I don't even know what to say. I'm just devastated, and I think everyone is.
Yeah.
I almost wish we had a reason and an understanding.
Right.
It's scarier to think that people are capable of this.
Right. But then the thing is this, to start blaming, you know, the blame started going around right away. But I think we need to look at the individual, right? I mean, to me, the question is this. With million people in this country, 330 million people in this country, this stuff only happens occasionally. Mm-hmm. It's like you would think it would happen every day.
Well, it's the same thing with an airplane crash. One airplane crashes and we think, that's we're all going to die.
Right.
The minute you get on a plane. And we don't realize that thousands of flights happen single day, all day, 24 hours a day. Thousands of flights around the world are happening. So that ratio of like rare occasion.
Right. Yeah. So we should consider ourselves completely lucky and then examine this particular thing rather than start with all the gun control again and the politics again.
Well, and if you
divide it again, you know, I mean, look, there's room for conversation there. There's no doubt. But to go and change laws just because of one crazy person.
Well, yeah, and this guy didn't, you know, have the background of a sociopath or a psychopath. You know, there's nothing really to track here where we could predict.
Right, exactly.
You know, the behavior. I mean, this is a total anomaly, I think. But again, you know, everyone wants to either fix, change, or do something.
Right.
You know, it's like
just to do something,
You got to do something. You got to respond.
Right.
You know,
and find out why and who's responsible and that sort of thing. Yeah, yeah.
It's a that's a male thing. Quick fix, right?
But I mean, it's again, there are so many broken systems in our society. So many broken systems.
Yeah.
It's just there's no way. I mean, everybody. I believe in gun control. The way that I think that we all have the right to carry an arm.
Right.
I agree with that. But then we have to figure in mental illness and the background checks, like we were saying last week.
That's
tricky not
too.
Cover that.
No, that's tricky.
Yeah, very tricky. And you can lie all the way through that. Some of the best psychopaths in history are able to pass lie detector tests and mental evaluations.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's
there's so many external factors there. I mean, like, let's say someone loses their job, but they took the test 2 weeks ago. I mean, how do you measure for external stress in someone's life? On a monthly basis, annual basis. I mean, there's too many variables.
Because
here.
It's monstrous and epic in the most horrific way to think about what would cause somebody to just open fire on a group of sitting ducks.
Right, right. But that's the thing. I mean, it's the lack of moral values. I think, you know, morality breaks down when you're okay with murdering people, then you have no morals.
I think it all goes back to what we were just saying about a total power exchange.
So you
it's
know, it's
the
could
most
be,
powerful thing that you could do. I mean, really, if that's what you're after is to gain that kind of control that you can wipe out that many people in one. It's sick.
Yeah.
It's incredibly sick. But that's what I'm saying. Why are we giving assault rifles away?
Right.
Why are we just
assault rifles?
How about just
a
handgun?
Right.
That's
right.
Okay. But machine guns?
Right.
Because why?
That's a lot of deer.
Yeah.
It's
a lot of deer.
If you're
and
quote hunting.
Right, right. I mean, think about it. Soldiers use this because they need to. They need to.
But
you
they're
know,
in the
you
military.
Can't
this
right.
Is a, this is a, we're just talking about everyday people who go in for a gun.
I agree. I mean, assault weapons have no place.
No place.
With civilians.
None. And so
right?
That's like the whole thing about gun control and the, you know, why are they not covering that part?
Is yeah, like, I don't think most people would argue that, right?
Right, right, right.
Either
right.
Side,
right.
That's what I'm saying.
Right. So
yeah.
Why can't we just say, okay,
we'll
so we are all can bear an arm. We all have the right to bear an arm. And that arm has to be nothing more than a this.
Yeah.
Right.
And everything else goes into the hands of...
Why is that so hard to pass?
Yeah, why?
Yeah.
That's what I mean, broken systems. But, you know, there's no more broken system than, than
and
our
you
government.
Have the, and you have the NRA. So. The NRA is apparently very strong, very powerful, if they're able to fight this, because they're the main ones that want this, you know.
They want to keep it?
Yeah, they want to keep this, you know. They want to have as much access to weapons as possible.
Mm.
That's what the NRA stands for. Because it's an organization probably of weapon makers and stuff, too, you know?
Well, the thing is, and we don't ever even really think about it. We may debate, but we don't ever get proactive about anything like this unless something like this happens and then we're all, like, shocked.
Yeah,
you know?
Right.
But, I mean, while we were sleeping, assault rifles and machine guns were being given out pretty liberally to anybody.
Yeah.
I mean, even after Sandy Hook, nothing really changed, which to me, I mean, I don't even want to have that conversation.
Let's go back to Columbine.
Yeah, Columbine, yeah.
So, yeah, so this stuff happens and people snap and it happens. But I also think we need to take it one case at a time and not think we can predict these things because of blah, 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 you know. So, yeah. By the way, you co-host is here. I don't know if you need to leave early or not. I'm not kicking you out, but I'm reminding you that you have a show after this.
Oh, no, Matt, I was...
No. Stay, please stay.
Yeah, because I wanted to ask you. We have a...
I just wanted you to know she's here.
That's okay, I'll hang a few
more
minutes.
That was all I was doing.
I want to talk to you more about what Sam was saying, that you do all these other things.
Oh, I know. I haven't even juggled for you yet.
I know.
Okay, so
truth is, I can't juggle, but...
It's a very tough thing to do.
So that's good. Matt, have you done something different other than the current industry in your life when you started out?
Yeah, I was a private practice therapist for about 10, 15 years.
Oh, okay. Wow. So, but you stayed in the same field.
I'm in the same field. My struggle really was I would get people with drugs and alcohol problems to my private practice. And you really, as an independent individual therapist, you have a hard time fighting addiction on that level because addiction is such a social disease. And so people, they came once a week, they were struggling. My services were not enough. And so I was kind of helpless, wasn't getting good results. And I realized, wait a minute, let's look at some of these bigger systems and how they work and why they're more effective. And so
you discovered that group therapy actually works better for addiction.
Much better.
So that's why those 12-step programs and all that stuff, they seem to work.
Yeah.
We had this argument here the other day with somebody else, maybe Tori or Rachel, I don't know. But we were talking about this, how, you know, it's... what did I want to say? Shit. I just forgot. Like anyway.
The argument of 12 steps.
Yeah, the 12 steps. Yeah, they said it doesn't work,
well,
blah, blah, blah.
Because they get addicted to
the... Oh, you were the one.
I was?
No.
It doesn't matter, but
we had somebody on the phone. Yeah. Okay, I remember.
They get addicted to 12-stepping.
It was Rachel.
So that's the argument. Yeah. The argument is they become addicted to the 12 steps, and they call pro-dependence on people, is what they say.
Oh.
And the other side of that is I would rather have someone addicted to people than to drugs. But I see the argument. I definitely see it. The way this is the bottom line. It's a chronic disease, and there's three ways to attack it. You have psychological, you have social, and you have biological. Mm. Any chronic disease, you treat those three ways. So with the psychological stuff with addiction, we have motivational enhancement therapy or cognitive behavioral therapy. Those are the two empirically validated ways. That's done with a therapist. Social is that idea of a 12-step. If you don't like 12-step, there's other groups called Smart Recovery. But the idea really isn't a matter of the 12-step. It's getting together with a group of people.
With people.
Being together, not
support,
isolated, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then the biological, there's comfort meds out there. There's meds that block receptor sites so you can't get drunk or you get sick if you drink, stuff like that. So psychological, biological, social, that's the three ways we attack it. With that, I will shut up and leave you guys.
No, man.
Please don't shut up.
Yeah,
we love you.
I'm just
we
getting
love
into
you.
It, yeah.
It just said he's going to come out and his co-host will go, what do you mean you were busy? We need to prepare for the show. But everybody, Matt Polacek.
Thanks, Matt.
Yes, and he's got a lot more to say. So stay tuned right after this show right here on Channel 1, and you'll hear Answers for the Family. And we didn't ask him how people can find him, but I would imagine if you just contact he's the director of the Betty Ford Center out here in West L.A., so you'll be able to get him in. You know what? Sometimes I wish I could go to something like this. You know? I mean, it's like it helps you really look at your life, you know, in many
different
ways.
Well, just go to therapy.
You know? Well, I know, but I like groups. I like groups. I've tried this once.
You can.
I went in for a dual diagnosis of bipolar and marijuana addiction.
Okay.
So I went into a rehab place because my therapist recommended it, and I was going through a really hard time. But it really wasn't the place for me because, you know, I had to stand here and there and say I'm an addict and all this stuff where... I told him, I said, now you guys know me. I said, do you think if I stop the marijuana, my problems will end? And they said, no.
No, of course not.
Because I got underlying issues. You know, I got bipolar. I got this. I need therapy. I need meds. I need this. So, but I've been to this, and I remember what I did like is taking a break from life. This was an inpatient thing.
Okay.
Taking a break from life. Being there for a week or two, they usually send you there for 30 days if you're sent there by a judge, because many people go to rehab because
they
a judge
got an
sends
accident
them there,
or
right.
they got caught doing something.
Right, exactly. So 30 days, but to me that's way too long. So I was there for a week, 2 weeks maybe, and you get to be with people, and I think that's the important thing, because when you're an addict, often you're alone and lonely. You do it by yourself, you know? So it disconnects you. So then in order to get out of that, you need to have people around you. And, you know, so they get a sponsor and somebody who they have to answer to with all the stuff they do, you know, so that helps. I never tried that, never tried having a sponsor, never really went to 12-step meetings other than the ones that were held at the rehab place. But I think it should work. I mean, I can see the point of it. You know, I mean, people are into heroin, into all that stuff, come into there, and you go, my God, you know, these people are like really
I think anything that helps even a little bit is good. But I know that in my early 20s, I went to a 12-step program called CODA. Which is
codependency.
Codependence Anonymous.
Right.
And I won't get into the story that brought me there, but obviously it has something to do with family relations and all that.
Right.
But CODA, what I found there was the first couple of visits, I felt like I'd landed someplace really good that made me feel a lot better about, because I didn't understand at all what was happening with me. And I was caught in a toxic relationship with my parents. So it's, but then after, let's say, a couple of months, I realized that nobody was really getting any better. Because week after week, it was the same people who got up and spoke, because you're allowed like 15, 20 minutes on the microphone and the meetings go on for all hours. But it's a lot of coffee, a lot of smoking, and a lot of people crying on the microphone. And I just couldn't take it anymore, because I don't have patience for that.
Right.
You know, like, I, like, if you're not getting any better, then why are you still going? Right. And for me, it was like, I knew very quickly, even at 21, 22, 23 years old, that I think I last time I went, I was 22, was I was, that wasn't for me.
So it wasn't working.
And
for you,
there were guys, like, I got asked to be a speaker at a meeting. You know, they pick you, like, it's this big, you know, it's
you're
this,
like a celebrity.
It's an honor. But it's random. They just pick, you know, whatever, and say, we'd like you to speak at the meeting. So basically, you're hosting the meeting. You're you're like the lead talk. You're the lead person on the microphone, right? And I realized that there was something called, I don't know, I don't remember the exact term, but it's like 12-stepping something or other, where they, where the guys in the group 12-step new women that come in.
Really?
Yeah, and it's usually amongst the younger crowd. Yeah. I saw it in 20-year-olds, you know, and nobody ever did it to me, but... But I was a bitch, you know, like I could see where they would. I mean, I was really, I was tough shit back then. Like,
really?
Nobody was going to mess with me. Well, I was trying to make it in the entertainment industry, and you have to be tough.
Yeah.
You have to be strong to go into these power meetings and pitch your ideas fearlessly and
really
believe.
Do.
Yeah. So anyway, I was not like, you know, I wasn't able to grasp this whole thing, but I became friends with a girl who said, just be careful because these guys in here are like vultures.
Yeah,
they see
a
new girl come in and they befriend you, become your counselor.
Right.
They become your
so it's
person.
It's always a sexual thing, you know? It's always like that with guys.
Mentor, whoever it is, your person that you, who's your, the person you're supposed to call when you're having moments where you think you're going to use again.
Right.
Or the person that, you know, you can call and say, I'm having a hard time. Mm-hmm. And then they let you, they love it because they're weak. The women are weak and they are vulnerable and they're easy prey.
Right. Wow. That's a sad commentary. I mean, let, you know, sometimes I think women would just rather just be left alone and let me do the thing I came here to do, like work out, whatever, you know, rather than just
have a career.
Yeah.
Actually have a career where you're respected.
All the time, you know?
And you're not like your job isn't in jeopardy. You know, when your job is in jeopardy, everything is in jeopardy. Your mortgage, your apartment payment, your car payment, your health insurance, your car insurance, your groceries, the gas in your car, you know, and if you have somebody, you know, when I was at the recording studio, I was overqualified for the position, but it was a great position that had a tremendous amount of growth potential.
Right.
And I got to meet really big people in the industry and became friendly with a couple of them.
Yeah.
One guy I became you know, who just saw that I had all this talent and that I had other things going on. And he was the one that opened the door for me at DreamWorks 2 years later after I lost my job.
Yeah, so not all guys are like that.
But, you know, but he also wanted money in exchange for that. You know? I mean, it was, he had a business called consulting. That's a big business in the industry, which basically means you're a finder.
Yeah. All right, well, we got to wrap up, Kay. Kay Brand, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
Of course, Matt Polacek, thank you for joining us. Everybody, check him out. And where can people find you, Kay?
Okay, you can find me on Amazon. It's K-A-Y, Brandt, B-R-A-N-D-T, or my YouTube channel, which has a ton of my movie trailers. Not tons, but my most recent movie trailers are on there, as well as some really funny behind-the-scenes footage from my movies. And that's K, just my initial K, B-R-A-N-D-T. You can find me on Twitter at Jewelbox Films, and Facebook, just K Brandt, Instagram, K.Brandt.
Sounds good. Thank you so much, Kay. Everybody check her out. You know what? I totally spaced on the YouTube trailers that you have. I'm going to check them out.
Yeah, I sent you the link.
Okay. You did?
I did.
Oh, well, you see what an ass I am. I don't have time for anything, Kay.
It's called short-term memory.
But no,
memory,
it is. It's definitely been affected by the weed.
Oh, yeah.
But anyway, on that note, folks, stay tuned for other shows right here on LA Talk Radio. We thank you for joining us every day. Rachel will be back tomorrow, and Kay will be back probably soon. So okay. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and we'll see you tomorrow.
Listening to Sam in the Morning with Rachel exclusively on LA Talk Radio.